Hi everybody, just want to do a quick sound check. Just want to make sure I can be heard. Can you hear me? Beautiful. Hello everybody, really excited to be with you here today. Thank you. And it's great to hear the last interview as well, or parts of it. I thought it was pretty cool. Trying to log on here has been such a challenge, or it feels like a challenge for me. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to get on because I hadn't been able to get on to Pal Talk this last couple of times. And so this time around, I tried to sign on about an hour ago, and I couldn't get in. And I kept trying. I went to forums to figure out how to deal with this error message that kept coming up. And, you know, the beautiful thing about what was unfolding for me is really this ever-presence, knowing that regardless of whether or not I was going to get on, that things would be okay. This recognition that all things work for good. And if it meant that I wasn't to make it on time, that was okay too. So it was this beautiful experience of trust. And I tried to reach out to Lynn, who is usually extremely helpful and certainly always available. And so I reached out on Facebook. I got no messages returned. I reached out in Skype. I got no message returned. But still, there's this awareness or this presence that all things work for good. And I don't know what just happened, but somehow I managed to just make it in the room like a few minutes before we're supposed to go on. So here I am, excited, in complete trust. And the last three sessions is really about exploring this idea of heaven and coming into this experience where there is an awareness that there's never really a problem. And isn't that what heaven is? Is this recognition, awareness of what is untouched, regardless of what is happening in form, or what regardless of what's happening in perception. It's perception itself that seems to pull our attention, and the word attention was talked about in the first episode or series of this, and we may have even talked about it in the second, and we'll talk about it again today. This idea of attention being so narrowed that it feels very constricted, and what we really desire, what the heart's call for, is free attention, where there isn't any investment whatsoever in perception. And so perception becomes very real when we're so narrowly tied to it, when the outcome is so wanted. This is something that I've dealt with the last couple of days. I'll share a little bit about what's been going through my mind and healing with. So in case you don't know, I'm letting you all know now, we are doing a retreat come the early new year in February in LA. I'm doing it with a few other mighty companions, and I'm really excited about it. But Thursday was the launch. Part of the setup on the website is tracking the affiliate sales. So certainly, you know, these events cost money. We also, to the best of our ability, want to provide compensation for the speakers, and certainly want to credit the speakers who bring people to these events, and certainly any teacher that has put out marketing efforts to bring into these events. So we certainly want to credit that appropriately. We want to make sure that we can track it to the best of our ability. Anyways, we launched on Thursday, and the good news is we had a lot of people come to the site. We had people register for it, but the plugin wasn't working on my website. And which meant that every sale or any registered guest that was coming in, I didn't know where it was coming from. And so I started to panic. And so I had set aside my day on Thursday to do all these fun things. I was planning on going to yoga. I was going to take time to go to the beach. Like, I live in Kona, Hawaii, and so why not go to the beach? And then all of a sudden, I woke up Thursday, and I realized this was happening, and I started to go to town. Started to get on the web and try to figure it out. All the while, I'm like, there's this tension building because there's time that I'm working against. For every moment that this problem, as I perceived it, was not fixed, there was going to be an error in registrants. So it's like, I gotta fix this problem. Now, whether we're talking about this affiliate issue or this website issue or anything else, when we are feeling as if we need to fix something, we are in the experience of time. We're working against time. And here I was working against time to fix this problem right away. And I, you know, all the teachers, thankfully, and God bless them all, bless everybody, but they were working really hard to get the news out in social media and mailings, but I could not figure out the problem. So I eventually called, you know, the website for support, and they weren't very helpful. In fact, I was waiting online for like an hour and a half at one point just to talk to somebody, and they would give me the wrong direction, and I would start from square one. I was reading forums, watching videos. I was doing all this, like this, all this energy was just like being focused on trying to fix this problem. And now we're like at the end of the day. So I had spent like 10 hours just like trying to figure out this problem. And in these 10 hours is this overwhelming sense of constriction and thoughts of disappointment, of feeling like, you know, I had launched this, it was the first day, I didn't do it right, I didn't do my homework, I didn't test out the site. And I can feel all this is what I would say is a very human experience of confusion and a human experience of not feeling good as judged by the human in me or the human I perceive myself to be. Now, thankfully for the Course and thankfully for the gift of grace, this wasn't unfolding without awareness. So throughout this experience, it wasn't like I was so lost that I wasn't aware of the thoughts. The thoughts were there. And I can see the silliness, or there was an awareness of the silliness of the thoughts, but nonetheless, they were there. And finally, but, you know, by the end of the day, relief came. But the relief came not from fixing the problem. The problem wasn't solved in form at the end of the day Thursday. In fact, the problem continued on Friday, and it continued through yesterday, Saturday. But there was relief at the end of the day simply because with awareness on these thoughts, avoiding none of them, God's grace, as it's always given, was accepted and allowed as I was willing to give up my thoughts and look at the thoughts with the Holy Spirit, with God. The presence within me, this is the same presence that I'm speaking of, that is aware as I was trying to get on to Pal Talk, what is undisturbed within, despite the fact in perception I seem to not be able to get on Pal Talk, despite the fact that I couldn't get in touch with Lynn, despite the fact that there were fear or there were thoughts that believed in problems, there's an undisturbed awareness. And that same undisturbed awareness, when we are vigilant for it, which is another way of saying being vigilant for what is unalterable, being vigilant for the Holy Spirit, eventually, that being the portal, eventually, if not immediately, because salvation is in an instant, fully accepted is relief. Heaven is not problems solved in the world. Heaven is recognizing that there is no problem, regardless of what the form is saying to me. And so it's interesting because I did just see I saw a quote that stood out to me. It says something, a paraphrase in the Course, it says something like, you know, in reality, delay doesn't mean anything, but in time, delay is tragic. In time, delay is tragic. And so in these moments where there's confusion, or in these moments where I want to fix the computer or the website, or I want to get onto Pal Talk, the suffering is not because there's an actual problem, but because there's a tension on time. There's a tension on trying to be somewhere outside of this eternal moment. Somewhere outside of what is unchanged or unchanging. And that's really the root of all suffering. I want out of this and I want to be in something else. And that something else is always an image of the problem solved. It's an image of the correction, but it isn't the correction. An image of the correction isn't the correction. The correction is a complete acceptance of this, which can also be said letting it go. Suffering comes from not getting what we think we want, absolutely. And there's a fight, it feels like there's a fight or a tension against what is unfolding. And that tension against what is unfolding is another way of saying there is judgment against what is unfolding. And the judgment against what is unfolding is based upon an assumption that I am a person who's at the effect of what is unfolding. The assumption that I'm at the effect of what is unfolding puts me in a position to protect against what's unfolding. So with every change in perception, there's an energetic pull or desire or effort to be cautious, to manipulate, to make for myself, which is another way of saying to make myself separate from the whole, to hold on to the me. Yes, you're either judging or being in gratitude. You're either working against the world, or you're working against perception, or you're in the experience of what you are, which is gratitude. And there's nothing, the irony is that there's nothing, no thing to be grateful for. I don't know where the Course talks about it, but I'll paraphrase it, where the Course basically says, you know, your happiness cannot be dependent upon someone else's loss. So to be grateful for something is to say that somehow someone has to go without for you to have it, to be grateful for abundance, to be grateful for physical health. No. Although those are pointers and certainly very helpful, to be grateful for things brings about an experience, you know, and it's certainly a stepping stone to think of our lives in terms of what we're grateful for, but that eventually we find we step above or move beyond to realize that the whole point of the exercise of realizing what you're grateful for is not to desire those things, but to come into the experience of gratitude, which is not dependent upon things. It is the relinquishment of judgment, and it is the acceptance of what God's gift really is to us, which is everything, which is the allness that we are. But it's hard for the mind. Well, it's impossible for the mind to understand that. And so I'll go back to simply the message that I started with, which is simply there's nothing ever being done to us, there's nothing ever wrong, and all stories told that go against that are just that, stories. And whenever we're in a story, we're in time. In eternity, time means nothing. I'm sorry, in eternity, delay means nothing, but in time, delay is tragic. And whenever we're in time, we are delaying the immediacy of salvation, the immediacy of knowing that we are gratitude itself. Delay means nothing in eternity. Why? Because delay is a function of time. You can't have delay without time. What is delay but to put off? So in time, when there are stories, if I tell a story must be in time. If I tell the story about how things are not working out, it is a story in time about what happened. It's on a timeline. And in that story, there's a perception of me. Even if it's a pleasurable story, it's still a perceptual experience of me on a timeline coming from somewhere or going somewhere. But we know this is so evident when we start to look at this. We know that that's not true when we are happiest. Like when we are in an experience of gratitude, complete gratitude, when we're in the wholeness of happiness, there is no timeline. We're not even aware of our bodies. We're not even aware of time itself. In fact, how many times have we had experiences that have been so joyful, whether it's the birth of a newborn, whether it's the excitement of a new journey, whether it's the joy of a good joke and a shared laughter. In that experience, the awareness of time is dissolved. And so when we kind of, if you will, come back, we often refer to that experience like, oh wow, time goes fast when you're having fun. Well, yeah, because it's not there. It's not really that time goes fast. It's your attention is free. That's heaven. But even in my statement, that's heaven, makes it seem like it's something. It's not something outside. It's here. It's this. When our attention isn't narrowly focused on me and my story, me and time. And there's nothing wrong with the practicality of time. It's only when we have an investment in it and we believe somehow we can alter, change, manipulate life as it unfolds. As if we can actually alter what grace has already given, or as if we can somehow have a separate will from God, as the Course would teach us. There is no separate will other than the will of God. There's just an illusion of a separate will. And how does that illusion take form in our experience? It's the illusion of choice. It's the illusion of our story. The more we're invested in time, the longer it seems to be. Yeah, that's the delay. And it's so funny. It's like when I was dealing with this website issue, I kind of chuckled many times because it can be seen that there was delay. It's like God is always giving us or extending himself to us in the formlessness of who and what God is. So it's like love is always here and always being extended. Love is really all there is. But somehow, in the mind of the separate person, or in the mind of the person, or the thought stream that thinks it's a person, it's like pushing away God. Let me push away God so I can fix this problem. Because when I fix this problem, what I want, which is the relief, which is really God, then I'll be happy. That's when I can receive God. And what the Course in all spiritual teachings are saying over and over and over is that it cannot be found on the timeline. It cannot be in the future. including enlightenment. Enlightenment cannot be in the future. And it's not. It's here. It's this. I read a quote that I thought was kind of cool on Facebook. I don't remember who said it. Papa G, I think, said it. So I'll paraphrase. It was something like, when you are aware of the illusion, or when there's awareness of the illusion, which all of us have an awareness of the illusion. And when I say all of us, the all of us that I'm referring to is really the one of us, or the one that sees, or the one that's aware. When the awareness is aware, or awareness is aware of the illusion, as is evidenced by this joining and presence, and as we talk about these principles, that is enlightenment. The awareness of the image making, the storytelling, the manipulating, the imaginary scenarios. When we are aware of that, despite the fact that there may be feelings and perception still unfolding, nonetheless, being aware, the awareness itself, is enlightenment. When we are aware of the illusion, that's enlightenment. And it's immediate. It's an immediate awareness. But when we think we're enlightened, we're back in the illusion. To place enlightenment in the future is to put it where you will never be. You never will be. Absolutely. You can only be in all ways. In all ways. You cannot be any place other than in allness. And the future is itself, the idea of the future itself, is now as well. So even if you buy the idea that you'll be enlightened in the future, it must be that you have to be enlightened now, because the future is this. And then there's a part of the mind that wants to take whatever this is, as we discuss and as we contemplate and as we come together and join, that wants to take some of this and do something with it. And there's nothing to be done with this. That doesn't negate the tools that we have in situations where this awareness seems to be blocked. So when I say that there's nothing to be done with this, it's not to say that we don't use the practical applications of spiritual teachings, and particularly A Course in Miracles, because that's been in my experience. Doesn't mean that we still don't use prayer as a means or a way or a medium to the miracles that we desire. That's not to say that, but it is to say that after all that, after the mind has trained itself, or as the mind has been trained to use these principles and use these tools and build the conviction of what's ultimately true, which is the unaltered part of us, of the unalteredness of what we are, is unaltered. Even the idea of miracles are no longer needed. Why do you need a miracle if you know who you are? Who cares what's happening in form? Isn't that the teaching that Jesus taught us by taking on the cross? To say nothing in form matters. When Jesus, I wasn't around when Jesus was around, but I'm going to assume that Jesus being on the cross wasn't even asking for a miracle. So what's the lesson in that? The lesson in that is he did not see himself as a body. He did not see himself at the effect of the world or at the effect of perception. So what is the he that I'm talking about? Is it the body Jesus? No. It is the unaltered identity that we share with this character, Jesus. The Holy Spirit. So then the question we ask ourselves is, what is that unalteredness? What is the quality or the essence within us that is unchanging? How do we come to know that? If we feel like we don't know that, if we feel like it's still lost to us, the inquiry is, what is in my experience that has always been in my experience that is unchanged? What is the quality, the you-ness, the essence, the formless of me? What is that? If I was to try to find myself, where behind the eyes, that space, that definitionless sense of self, what is that? Because therein lies the portal to truth. Some people use the word, I am the watcher, I am the observer. And those are great, great stepping stones. Those are great symbols. But even as the watcher and even as the observer, there's something that goes even deeper. So let the watcher and the observer be portals. And they are a portal to what? They're a portal to the stillness that God extends. Lesson 49 from A Course in Miracles says, God's voice speaks to me all through the day. We're not left out. I used to think I was left out. Yeah, God doesn't speak to me all through the day. He's obviously speaking to other people who have had the experience, but he's not speaking to me. So then the question in my mind always became, well, if that is true, then it must be that he's speaking to me right now and I don't see it. I don't hear it. Well, how am I listening for it? Well, if I'm listening for it in terms of a sound for which my senses are going to interpret, because if I lost my hearing, then it can't possibly mean that if I lost my hearing that I would lose God's voice. God's voice speaks to me all through the day. What is it then that is in experience that I have not paid attention to? What have I missed? What has been in front of me all this time? What is the communication that has been obscured or ignored because my attention, there's that word again, my attention has been on form. My attention has been on time. Somehow we think that, you know, because our attention's on time, or we put our attention on time because we think we're actually doing something. We think we're actually adding to reality, as if we can add to reality. As if reality needed our help. So what is it that I've ignored? What is it that's not here? And the funny thing is that the mind really can't figure it out, because it's nothing that we're talking about. The irony is that the presence, the definitionless sense of awareness that is within us all, that's all there really is, it being formless, it has no characteristic for which we can grab. So it's this nothingness that's untouched by anything that is speaking to us. But from the perspective of form, from the perspective of an ego, from the perspective of a separate me, I can't do anything with it. But for whatever reason, I seem to be able to do something with the images in my mind. So I can plan, I can invest. I can seemingly create a life for myself. I can make a future. And again, this isn't a message that those things are wrong or that those things won't continue to unfold. This is not about behavior. Those things are certainly allowed. But the moment we think that we can actually take credit or blame for anything that's happening in our life, then we are lost to the definitionless presence for which God speaks to us. If we think that we in any way, shape, or form are at the helm of anything, then we are obscuring the identity for which we so long for. Again, it doesn't mean we don't do the course. It doesn't mean we don't apply principles. But the point of the course, the point of spiritual principles, is to bring you to the place of recognizing you are not there. You, as you think yourself to be, is not there. And every time you give something over to the Holy Spirit, what you're saying is, there is no me here. When we ask for guidance, what we're really saying is, I want to get out of the way and let grace show me that I'm not needed, that the person, the separate identity, the idea of me doing something is not needed. We don't make a future. We experience life in the present moment, one moment at a time. Yeah. But it's funny, we still believe that we do make a future. In fact, I just came out of conversation with my partner. We're talking about what's happening here in Hawaii on the ranch. And so the conversation and the talk is like, okay, so what's going on? Where's, you know, what are we investing in? What's happening? And really, the heart of the conversation is really a call to just be reminded of, you know, what is it for? You know, what are we doing? You know, what are we, you know, what are the choices that we're making and what are we doing for? In other words, are we really living from the moment and in joy? Are the choices that are seemingly unfolding, are there choices of joy or in happiness? Let's look at it together. And so in our conversation came some thoughts about the future and some hopes about the future. And it's funny that our minds, you know, it's actually quite beautiful that our minds have the capacity to take images and construct really a world in the mind of our wants and desires. Now, the funny thing is, like, sometimes they seem to be fulfilled. You know, sometimes there seems to be logic to the way we think and the future. If I do something today, if I save $10 a week, by the end of 10 weeks, I'd have $100. So there seems to be logic to the thinking and the planning and the future. But the trick is that the thoughts that arise, the thoughts that talk about the future, the mind's capacity to build these images in such a way in which they make the future real or appear real, is just a function of a powerful mind. It isn't the function of a person creating anything. So to have a conversation about, you know, what's happening and talk about, you know, these thoughts about the future is really an opportunity to just expose the thinking so that it's not taken so seriously. And so there's a gentleness of being willing to give up, really give up the future. This is not to say that we, you know, we can't, you know, set goals and want things. That's fine, but when it's done with the awareness of ultimately our purpose, then this awakening is a gentle one. And we're not in charge of this awakening. Our responsibility, the Course would say, is to accept the atonement for ourselves, which is to accept the correction. And when we are aware that something needs to be corrected in the mind, that too has been given by grace, not by the person who wants to awaken. But at first it feels like that is, you know, that is a choice, and it feels like that is the person. But that too begins to dissolve, and so credit is exclusively given to grace. Grace takes credit for all, well, all that is. God takes credit for all that is. The benevolence of the universe. Yep. The benevolence of the universe. I like that. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it's like all things. I've talked about this before. It's just, I love talking about it because I feel like when the mind is open to accepting this idea, there's relief in it. And the idea is simply that the universe is one movement. Nothing is moving independent of anything else. All of it is moving together. It's like, if we, you know, we call it a system. You know, the universe is a system. There's a happening of things working together. And so this body is just a seeming part of this system. But all of it, including the thoughts, is all working together as one movement. There's nothing working independent. And so, you know, from that perspective, we then realize even the hardship that we seem to go through, even the situation where I couldn't get the website to work. I can't get on to Pal Talk. Including all that. That is all part of the one movement, which is not to my credit or blame. Therein lies my peace, or therein lies peace itself, because there's no need to do anything. The universe has got it. And I'm part of that. You know, I am part of the projection. I am the Craig is part of the projection. All of it. One word, one concept. Yes, all of it. Yep. You can call it consciousness itself. All of it working together in my mind. I see like this swirl, just kind of all of it. And so, as the thought of a person, or the sense of me that believes that I'm a body, of course I'm going to have a problem with the universe. Why? Because as the universe, as all things move, they're not going to move to my liking at times. And when I'm confused and thinking that I'm somehow separate from this system, rather than recognizing I am the system itself, I'm all of it. Consciousness itself. I am. And God is cause of consciousness. I'm like God in every way, with the exception that God created me, which is another way of saying you can have awareness without consciousness, but cannot have consciousness without awareness. Let life be exactly as it is. There it is. That's it. Let it be as it is. Creation knows what we are ready to experience. Yeah, that's in the plan. That's all. It's all perfectly aligned. It's like the domino analogy that we talked about last week, which is, you know, when someone sets up the dominoes, you know, you may have thousands of dominoes lined up on a table, And the first one gets tipped over, tipping over the second, the third, and so on and so on. Even if the 3,000th domino hasn't fallen, the trajectory has already been set. Which is another way of saying the script has already been written. The script is written. The one movement, the will of God, is not something that can be changed by a separate will. Let life be exactly as it is. And so the role of this essence of really who and what we are, this emptiness, this nothingness, this something that I could never describe, that no one really can describe in words, this experience of presence, this experience or knowledge, direct experience or knowledge of God's communication, its role is to unchain our will and set it free by accepting only God's will, which is basically to say, let life be exactly as it is. And the irony here is, even in the moments where our mind is in confusion, that too can be left exactly as it is. As is what I'm sharing. That's exactly the answer that I'm sharing in my experience of dealing with the website on Thursday, in my experience of having a hard time trying to get a pal talk. The suffering that comes with, you know, dealing with the web on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and dealing with, you know, not being able to get in pal talk or dealing with any, is really not what's happening, but my resistance to what's happening. So it wasn't that I had to wait an hour and a half online for support, which, by the way, I did that 3 times, talked to 3 different people, all of who gave me a different answer to my presenting problem, which could not be solved on that day. That wasn't the problem. My resistance to all of that happening, my judgment against all that happening, is where I suffer. I'm here on the. I spend a lot of time with animals on the farm here, and you know they teach me so much. And I know you all who love animals understand this and have the same experience. Sometimes I'll go out there and I'll water the. I'll give the chickens fresh water. I'll give the dogs fresh water. And then sometimes I'll see the water and it'll be like it needed to be changed like 2 days ago and I didn't do it. But it's not like the dog's sitting there thinking, this is a problem. It's not like the chickens are out there thinking, you know, where's my cracked corn? The forgiving nature in animals is such a wonderful symbol. And they have experiences where they're energetically driven to do things like bark or even attack. But the attack is my label on it. But dogs growl, they bark. But what they don't do is they don't judge themselves after they bark. What they don't do is hold a grudge. They don't judge any of it. Their attention is free. Therein lies heaven. Heaven is the mind that is unburdened by sin, unburdened by a mistake, unburdened by the idea that I'm a person who can possibly be at the effect of perception. When it's me who's put perception out there, it is me who's judged against it. It is me who judges against people. It is me who judges people. And as long as I judge people, as long as I even think of people in terms of separate from me, then I will be at the effect of those beliefs. And so I will be shown through experience that those beliefs are in fact true, until I look for the evidence of something else. Course in Miracles says, no amount of proof will prove to you what you don't want to see. I have to be willing, and that's where the willingness comes. We hear that over and over in the Course, willingness. I have to be willing to be wrong about everything that I think is true. The experience of heaven is truth itself, not through explanation, not through words, not through understanding, but through experience, through communication with God, which has nothing to do with voices, which has nothing to do with words, which has nothing to do with symbols. It is simply the immediacy of salvation when accepted right now. Reality itself as the unchanging is seen, is experienced, seen not through the eyes, but a knowing, Yeah, the holy instant is a sigh of release, a relief. Yeah. Yeah, choose to be happy by giving up all judgments. Heaven then becomes a reality. Yeah. All judgments serve to make us a person. That's all. That's the only purpose judgment has. All judgment serves to define you. When I judge against somebody, there is an assumption in that judgment about me. If I look at somebody and I don't think that they're not smart, then I've assumed myself to be at a certain level of intelligence. If I look at somebody and I judge them as beautiful, I'm judging them in relation to me on some level, to what I'm attracted to what and how I think I look. When I judge the presidential candidates, when I judge them, there's an assumption of who I am in relation to them. So the judgments itself serve to make me a person or separate. Now what happens if we judge nothing? The mind, the egoic mind goes, you need judgment. How would you get anything done? How would you protect yourself? How would you know what's right or wrong? Every judgment is an attack on something, absolutely. It's an attack on you. Every judgment is an attack on something. It's an attack on you. Why is it an attack on you? Because it splits the mind. It creates subject and object. It actually doesn't create subject and object, but it is one of the props, if you will, that keep this idea or experience of subject and object real. Creates them and us, yeah. Judgment is like one of many filters for which the light is obscured from experience. Judgment is shadow making. And so this awakening is a process of handing over this need or desire to shadow make. And we cannot underestimate the depth or the corruption that this thought system has. And so every time it seems to arise in our awareness, our responsibility is simply to accept the atonement for ourselves. Which is simply to accept the correction in our mind, to remember that we are not who we think we are. Guilt is the ego bragging for its badness. Yeah. And the awakening, you know, I'm just constantly reminded that the awakening is a gentle process. Certainly, seems to be a lot of giving up, a giving up of judgment, a giving up of the thought system, the ego, a giving up of personal desire, giving up. There's a lot of giving up, it seems. It could be scary. And I think on the last conversation I heard something about 100%, you know, we have to give 100%. But this is a gentle process, and so all these things that we are to give up, we will give up when it is to be given up. It's not something that we have to worry about. That's just the ego coming in through the door again. It's like a tough conversation. All of us have had the experience of having a tough conversation. I know I certainly have had my handful of tough conversations. And I'm sure I'll have more tough conversation. But the funny thing is the tough conversation itself is really not the hard part. The hard part is the time, here's that word time again, leading up to the tough conversation. Because it's the time leading up to the conversation that we're in thought, we're in the scenarios. Again, attention is on, what do I say? What am I going to say? What do I say that's going to offend somebody? What am I going to say that may reveal something that I don't want to reveal? Maybe I can't say what I want to say. What do I decide to do? All that uncertainty is the suffering, not the actual conversation. In the midst of the conversation, I think if we're really objective and looking at it from the perspective of spirit, we can see that in our tough conversations, they happen accordingly. In other words, if I have to say something and I'm holding back, it eventually will come out. And when it comes out, it is effortless. It is the thought about it or anticipation of it coming out, or it is the regret afterwards that I suffer. The anticipation of it or the regret, but the actual communication of it is actually quite easy. It comes out effortlessly. Even if it comes out, you know, how effortless is it to, like, you know, when you're all like riled up and you find yourself saying things that you don't even mean, it's coming out without any effort. It's just happening. Can we be in a space of unconditional love and non-judgment to even allow that? Tough conversations are just communications we resist hearing. Yeah. The miracle or the grievance. Yeah. In every moment. The miracle, which is simply the shift from fear to love. I always find it interesting if you watch some of Sri Nisargada videos. He comes across as a very angry, enlightened guy. He's like, a tough cookie. But the judgment about his anger is my judgment. So this is just all to say that no matter what's happening in our experience, it isn't the experience itself that's upsetting, it's our judgment, or the Course would say our interpretation of what's happening, including our judgment or interpretation of how far along we are in this enlightened path, whether or not we're doing the right thing for our enlightenment. All that is still part of judgment, part of me. Heaven is absent of all of that thinking. Because heaven, from the perspective of heaven, there is no thought of me. There's only this. There's only allness. Everything is me from the perspective of heaven. And so I feel very grateful and honored to share with everybody what's been going on in my mind. Miracles are joining. Yeah, this is a miracle. This is the joining. That's right. Not a note was missed in heaven's song. And so the miracles in joining is really the coming together to remember what's true. And we remember what's true by exposing the false. That's what it means to shine the light. So let me tell you where my confusion has been. Let me tell you what's been on my mind so that I can come into the experience by recognizing the valueless. I can come into what is valuable, which is this present moment, which is the only thing there ever was, the only thing there ever is, and herein lies the portal of heaven, always. And even if we miss it, it's always here for us when we recognize that, when we recognize the illusion, which is, again, to use Papaji's quote, the awareness of illusion is enlightenment. And eventually, through the repetition of this, the mind is brought back home so that perception is stabilized and attention is free on this definitionlessness identity, definitionlessness of experience, the wholeness of experience. And so my heart is just incredibly full with gratitude to have spent the last three Sundays with everyone in this room. My heart just feels open and light and joyous, knowing that, this is what we get to do. And I look forward to joining again with everyone, either on Facebook or at an upcoming event. If those of you are inspired to join us for the Miracle Share virtual conference that's coming up October 21st, go to miracleshare.org to find out more about it. There are, I think, about 26 different teachers that will be presenting, and we're really excited. I know Doug will be there. We have some new teachers, coming in. Alan, I can't think right now. My mind is just so empty. But I have a whole bunch of teachers that I can't think of right now that'll be there. I promise they're great, and you'll enjoy it. Also, yeah, exactly. I laugh out loud because really my mind is just like so, like I don't even, it can't go anywhere other than be here with you. But the point I'm trying to make is join us. If you are inspired, join us. If you want a scholarship, there are scholarships for the event, so certainly no one is left out. Everyone is welcome. Also, there is an upcoming retreat in Los Angeles as well. If you live in Los Angeles, you can come for a day, for just the day. If you need a place, you can stay. There's also a retreat center which you can stay at. If you want to watch it live stream, you can also watch it on live stream. And again, there are scholarships available. So you can go to my website and find out more about it, or visit me on Facebook and just stay connected. I believe now my time is up. I love you. I thank you. And yeah, with you always. Bye, everybody.